easier.
Okay. So let's begin. Good evening. It is, we are studying this week's Torah portion. The Sedra is on the Sedra Vayikra. So we are studying a discourse from this Sedra Vayikra from 1972. So that's 35 years ago. And it was the same, well, that Shabbat was the 3rd of Nisan, and it happens that tonight is the 3rd of Nisan. Tonight is the 2nd of Nisan. So so it's just the beginning of the month of Nisan, and so it's a discourse on Vayikra, which is the beginning of the 3rd book of the Torah. So that's what we have in front of us, this Vayikra. Vayikra el Moshe vayadave Hashem elav, and he called to Moshe, he meaning God. God called to Moshe, but it doesn't say he, it doesn't say God, it just says he. And God spoke to him, Mo'el Mo'ed, from the tent of meeting, Lemo, saying. So this is a rather unusual beginning. God called to Moshe, and then he spoke to him. And what he spoke to him about, which is what the rest of this page and the whole of this section of the Torah is about, this Sedra, is about the offerings in the temple. Do you notice something strange about the word Vayikra? Mm-hmm.
Small Aleph.
A small Aleph, that's right.
That got significance, and why I was looking at it.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
I
it's
never
not.
Seen it.
It's not. It's not. Is that the small Aleph? Laddie and the small Aleph. Right. Well, it's not a printing mistake. There are throughout the Torah a number of letters which tradition, going back a very, very long way, thousands of years, says these letters should be written small and these letters should be written big. So there are big letters and small letters, not only in the Torah, but in the rest of the Tanakh, in the whole Bible. There are a number of small letters and big letters.
And what's the significance?
Well, each one has its own explanation, or several explanations around it, why this particular letter is small or is big. Hi, how are you, Anthony?
Hi, good evening.
On this wonderful... Let's hope that the wine of Torah, or the oil, sometimes called the shemen, the oil of Torah, so it'll warm us up. Yes, so we have this little aleph, which does get touched on in the discourse as well. Hopefully, we'll get to it, but just in case not, one of the ways of explaining it. God is calling to Moshe in order to communicate to him Torah teachings. In order for Moshe to receive these teachings, he has to be humble. He has to have the smallness of humility in order to be able to receive the teaching from the divine. And so because of that, the Aleph is small to represent humility. There are many other explanations, but that's one of them.
Why is that for the Aleph?
The
first instance applies to Moshe, presumably.
Yes. And why the Aleph applies to Moshe?
Yeah.
I think the because the Aleph represents the relentless. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Shem. The Aleph represents the relationship of the Jew with God. The shape of the Aleph, if you look at it, it's a Yud on the right hand side at the top, which is represents the divine. Then there is a Yud on the left hand side at the bottom, which represents the person. And then there is a line in between, which is the Torah teaching, as it were, which bonds them together. And so it represents the teaching process. And in fact, the word Aleph means teaching, like in the word Ulpan, a place where you're taught. So that comes from the word Aleph. So Aleph is a word which means teaching. It comes over particularly in Aramaic, and but it is actually a Hebrew word, I think, as well. So Aleph means teaching. Aleph also means leader, and Aluf it's a general in the army, but it's also Aluf, Aluf Teiman, the head, the king, the sheikh of the sheikh of Teiman. In the Bible, it uses the word meaning a leader. So Aleph represents this process of communication from the divine to the individual, and so the smallness of the Aleph represents how it's through humility that this teaching is received. You could even say that it's through humility that the teaching is transmitted, because the Midrash, the sages call God's humility in communicating the Torah to us, that he contracts himself into the Torah. So there we have the beginning of this Sedra, and the Sedra goes on in a wonderful way, talking about the way in which an offering is brought, and many offerings, different kinds of offerings. And so with that we can we're equipped to begin the actual Maimah, the discourse of 1972, Vayikra El Moshe, and he called to Moshe. Oh, And Hashem called to Moshe, and he called to Moshe, and God spoke to him from the tent of meeting, and it goes on, Adam ki yakriv mikem, a person who offers from you, brings an offering. V'tzarich la'avin, now we have to understand, have elechol dibrot elechol amirot. For all the statements that come from God, whether they're in the form vayadaber or vayomer, or lechol tzivuyim, and all commands, kadma kriya, there actually came this calling beforehand. Whenever God spoke to Moshe, there was always a kind of an initial reaching out to Moshe, which is called here Vayikra. And the sages say, Kriya Lashon Chiba, as Rashi says. The calling is an expression of love, that there's an expression of love from Hashem to Moshe, and then comes the communication that's coming from God. Now, whatever God was speaking about to Moshe, whether it's the laws of the Sabbath, or how to build the Mishkan, or some other teaching, kashrus, whatever it is, there is always some kind of expression of love, this kind of expression coming to Moshe from God, and it's expressed in Hebrew, would be expressed, if it were mentioned, with these words, Vayikra El Moshe, he called to Moshe. The only thing is, the only time it's actually mentioned is here, and the sages infer that it's in fact all the time. Whenever God communicated with Moshe, there was always this expression of love. But the question is, V'lama ne'emra kriya b'fedush? Why is this calling expressly mentioned only b'parshat korbanot dafka? Specifically with this section, which is talking about korbanot, the offerings. Now, so that's the initial question. Why is this idea of this expression of love from God to Moshe, particularly with this chapter of the korbanot? One could suggest simply the Mashikatu Vayikra Bapashat Korbanotu, the reason why it has this Vayikra Nikol with this section of the Korbanot is because Lefi Shetchilat HaDibur Me'ol Moed, because the beginning of God speaking to Moshe from the tent of meeting that they put up, which is the Mishkan that we had in last week's Sedra, finally the completion of the Mishkan, the first thing that God spoke about from that tent of meeting, Haita Parshazu, was this section that we're reading now about the Korbanot. But that answer raises another question. Avol ze gufat tzarich biyo. That itself needs an explanation. Why is it that the very beginning of God communicating with Moshe from the tent of meeting, from the Mishkan, was specifically the Korbanot? There are many great important parts of the Torah. Why should it be that which is the main, the initial, the opening statement from God to Moshe? From this it also implies shahagilui the Torah, that the revelation of Torah, which is in yano shel oel moed, which is what the tent of meeting, what the sanctuary is all about. Because the whole sanctuary, the concept of the sanctuary is that they build a sanctuary in the sanctuary of the Ten Commandments in a golden ark, in the two tablets of stone, and Moshe in the Holy of Holies, and Moshe goes into the sanctuary and hears the voice of God giving him further Torah teachings. Now, those Torah teachings, so that's what the sanctuary is. And it seems from this that the revelation of Torah, which is the whole concept of the sanctuary, hu bi'ikar b'dinei korbanot, is basically concerning the laws of the korbanot. And that's like a question, you know, is that what the center of the Torah is? Surely there are many aspects of Torah. The Yesh Lomar, but one can suggest Zeu Gam Masha Sefer Vayikra. This is also why the book of Vayikra, this third book of the Torah, which is Sefer Korbanot, the book which is basically about the offerings. That's what the this third book of the Torah is about. And Nachmanides Ramban, as it says in footnote 5, Nachmanides talks about this in his introduction to this section of the Torah. He says this is basically the subject here. And it said, Hu achamur shebesvarim, in the Gemara, it calls this the most difficult of the five books of the Torah. This is the most difficult. Vezer gamashu sefer shlishi, and that's also really why it's the third book, the chamish hasvarim shebetorah, of the five books of the Torah. The Ma'alat HaTorah Shehi Oriyan Kvitai. The greatness of the Torah is that it's a kind of a mediator. It's the Torah which is in three parts, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, and as the Talmud says in footnote 7, it quotes Shabbat, Tractate Shabbat, the Talmud says there that a tripart Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, Tanakh, was given to a tripart people, Kohen Levi Yisrael, by a person who was the third child, Moshe, who came after Aaron and Miriam, in the third month. Nisan is the first month, E is the second, and Sivan is the third. So there are lots of things to do with three when you come to the Torah. And that quality of Torah is revealed particularly in this third book of the Torah. Now the reason why the three quality is so important is because you have Creator. See, there are three main aspects. You have the Creator, and you have that which is created. And it would seem that there is like a contradiction between them, because the Creator, God, is infinite, is one, and that which is created is multiple, fragmented. The Creator is all holiness, and the created realm is a very confused and confusing realm with many different problems. So the Torah comes to join the creator and the created. So the Torah is therefore the third item in the equation. And that enables the creator and the created to be bonded together. So that's the nature of Torah. That's why the Torah is described as having the quality of three. And so therefore, when one's looking at this, which is the third book of the Torah, Vayikra, Leviticus, its quality as Torah comes out, hu begilu yoter bedinei korbanot haTorah, when it comes to the laws of the offerings in the temple or in the sanctuary, this quality of the Torah as the three, the one which joins together the creator and created, comes out most particularly with the korbanot, with the offerings. וזה גם שזה שלכל הדיברות לתורה קודם קריאה לשון חיבה למדים ממה שכתוב בפרשת הקורבנות. And this is also the fact that with every statement of the Torah from God to Moshe, there was actually a calling, an expression of love at the beginning, but we learn it out from the concept from this passage about the offerings. Because also this quality of the Torah, that it always has an expression of love first, the main revelation of it, is with the rules, the laws concerning the korbanot. So we have here the idea of Torah, we have the idea of the love, the chibah, the love with which an expression of Torah is taught to Moshe from God, and we have the idea of the korbanot, and I'll write korbanot like that because offerings or sacrifices is not a really good translation for korbanot. Korbanot comes from which word? What's the basis of the word korbanot? That's right, and that means
to get close.
That's right. The korbanot, the offerings in the sanctuary or in the temple, are a way of getting close to God. And so there's something very special about that. And so therefore the idea that in any Torah communication, there's first of all this expression of love, is there particularly with reference to the korbanot, our section of the Torah, and the whole idea of the Torah is somehow linked to the korbanot. Yes.
Is it spelled differently? It's not.
What?
Krav, battle.
Yes, because when people are battling together, krav is the same root, because when people are battling together, they wrestle up close. So they come close to each other and fight. So it's very interesting that you have both coming near for battle or coming near, so the whole military terminology with krav.
Connected with killing.
Well, battle doesn't have to be killing, you see.
It doesn't have to, but
could be with
a sacrifice be without.
But it doesn't use the word sacrifice.
But why is it translated as sacrifice?
Well, that's an interesting cultural question.
Who did that? The Septuagint, or how did it come in this way?
It's interesting, you know, what is, I mean, sacrifice basically means one is giving up something. Yes, to give something up. Whereas the Torah concept of an offering is of coming close. Rather than giving something up, it's coming close. You may be giving something up in order to come close, or it may be some other kind of process. But the main thing is the coming close. Okay, you can write an essay on at some or paint the painting. Okay, bet.
Remain confused.
Confused.
Remain confused.
Remain confused.
That's what I can do.
Well, we don't want you to remain confused.
I always will be.
Well, there's always, you know, there are levels beyond, and not necessarily are there straightforward, simple explanations for everything. But I don't think that it's inherently a confusing thing. The idea of coming close can be in a positive way or in a negative way. It's, Are you asking about the general concept of the sacrifices, of the offerings in the temple?
Both that and battles.
Okay, because I think that they're a completely different thing. It's true that the the life force of the animal or of the plants, see, there's the inanimate world, the vegetable world, the animal world, and the human world are all somehow meeting together in this bringing of an offering in the temple. And that's it's a moment of bonding of the world with God. That's a very spiritual moment. It's not something that we're able to do now without the temple standing there. But when the temple is there, that moment of bonding is something very crucial in the relationship of existence with the divine.
That's what our tefillot are supposed to do now.
You're right. And our tefillot, our prayers, take that role. We have set tefillot, set prayers at the times of the offerings in the temple. And so the moment of prayer is itself a moment of bonding with the divine. Where somehow there is
one. Is the word kraus, fight or battle, is that the same thing?
That's the point that Judith's making. Oh. Yes. Like Krav Maga. Mm. Yeah. So that's the same word. Kuf Resh Bet. It's the same root. But and close, but close or battle. I mean, it's a battle being a close up event. The Yesh Levi's Alpi Masher Kotov Admor Marashav Nishmein Bali Lula De Beis Nissen. Now this can be explained according to what the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe Rabbi Shalom Dov Beis Nissen wrote, whose Yahrzeit is tonight on the 2nd of Nissan. He passed away on the 2nd of Nisan in 1920. So he wrote in a discourse, B'maimaro, in his discourse, Divra Maschil Odom Ki Yakriv. He wrote a discourse on the second verse, a man who brings an offering. And he says, why does it say a man who brings an offering? Because at first sight, Havelei Loima, it should have said, Ki sakrivu, when you bring an offering, ul miblila haske miu amakriv, without mentioning who is offering. See, it says a man who brings an offering. Or maybe ba maima, and he quotes in the maima in the discourse, the ita bazoya that it quotes, it brings in the Zohar. Zakoin in Yisrael, happy are the Jewish people, the kud shebrichu karolain adam, that God called them Adam, man. And so therefore, Adam ki yakri became, it's a special use of this word, the man, the one who brings the offering. If an Adam comes close from you, this Adam is something special. My time a karalon Adam, what's the reason they're called Adam? Michshum dichtiv, because it's written, v'atem advekim b'ashem elekechem, you who cleave to God, chayim kulchem hayoim. So it connects al pizem avay mashkatuv adam ki akriv. It connects the word Adam to the idea of the offerings ki hakoach sheyesh beYisrael, because the power there is in the Jewish people lahakriv korbanot, to bring offerings, hu lefi sheheim b'chinat Adam, is because they have the quality of Adam. What does Adam represent? Man in this highest level. Sheheim dvukim b'hakadosh baruch hu. They are cleaving to God. So through the fact that they are cleaving to God, this is what the Zohar is suggesting, through the fact that the Jewish people cleave to God, through that they have the spiritual power to bring these korbanot. Umamshech b'maima, and it continues in the discourse of Reb Shalom Dover of 1920, or a discourse that he said. It's 1906. The year that he said the discourse was 1906. So he continues in this discourse, Shal Derech Ze Ita B'Midrash, that we have a similar idea in the Midrash, which is in Vayikra Rabbah, The fact that God commanded the Jewish people to bring these offerings, because they are cleaving to me, as it's written in a verse, like a belt cleaves. It's a verse in Jeremiah. As a belt cleaves to the loins, to the hips of a man. So a man wears a belt round his hips, and that's being compared to the Jewish people cleaving to God. Now, it's an intriguing thing. If the Zohar brings it from one verse with one kind of image, and then somewhere else in the Midrash it brings it from another verse with a like related but different image, what's the difference between those two images? What's the difference between the Zohar and the Midrash? You know, you would expect them to say the same kind of thing. Why is it, what's being brought out by the fact that they are quoting a different verse? And it explains in the discourse, Shobamidrash medabe be'inyin advekus tekelim. In the Midrash, it's talking about the cleaving on the level of the vessel. Now, you see, you have in the whole connection between this sort of Kabbalistic dimension of the interplay between the Creator and the created, how you get from the Creator to the created, you have on the one hand the vessel, and within the vessel, you have the radiance. So you have, so the vessel is the keli, right? Kelim. And the radiance is or, is light. So, in everything, pretty well, you can talk about those two dimensions, the radiance and the vessel. And we can talk about being connected to God in terms of the vessel or in terms of the radiance. So that's what it's going to explore now. Because the point is that these two ways of speaking, that of the Midrash, which talks of a belt around the hips, Shebamidrash medaber b'inyan advekut dekelim, the Midrash is talking about the cleaving of the vessel. Shakelim heim bevchinis metzias. The vessel is something which actually exists. It's very firmly there. V'hayichud advekus shelahem, and the unity that there is on the level of the vessel, eino yichud atzmi. It's not an essential unity. The belt around the person's hips is not part of him. It's just the belt that he's wearing. It's not him. O kumoi ka'asher yidabe ka'ezo, like the way that a belt cleaves to the person. Sha'ezu matzias la'atzmoi. The belt is something separate. Elu shedobek la'adam, because it's tied around the person, so it's clinging to the person, but it's not really part of the person. Umazor b'daber, but in the Zohar it's speaking b'inyan advekus to oros. It's talking about the cleaving of the radiance. Shadvekus ra'yichud oros, when the radiance cleaves to itself to something. Then hu yichud atzmi. Then that's a unity on a very inner and essential level. V'lechein maybe I kosev atem adreikim b'Hashem b'Hashem elokeichem, and that's why the Zohar quotes the verse: "You are cleaving to Hashem your God," which is dreikus mamush, which is real cleaving, a real bonding. So in other words, the Jewish people are bonded to God, and there are different levels of this bonding, different aspects of this bonding. There's the bonding of the vessel, the outer dimension, which is a less total bond. It's there, it's a bond, it's very important, but it's less total. And then we have the bonding of the radiance, the inner bonding, which is something more powerful. Okay, section Gimel. Va'al pizeh yesh loimah, and according to this we can say, the fact that at the beginning of the book about the Korbanot, which is Sefer V'Yikra, it says a man who comes close, The fact that Jewish people are called Adam who mishum deba'atem advekim is because of this phrase, you are cleaving to God, as it says in the Zohar, shu adveku de'orot, which is the cleaving of the radiance. And the reason why this is connected together here with the idea of the korbanot and the calling with love, hu ki ha'koyach sheyesh v'yisrael akriv korbanot, the power the Jewish people have to offer the korbanot, is mainly because they're cleaving to God, is because they are bonding with God on the level of the radiance. So you see, the radiance, the love, the korbanot, they go together. There is this special quality that the Jew has had, that the Jew has, bonding to the Creator, and on the level of radiance, which enables the Jew, which enables the person to bring a korban, to bring an offering in the temple. It's this special spiritual quality to bring the offerings, not any offering. There are offerings that a non-Jew can bring as well. In the Book of Kings, Melachim, when it describes King Solomon dedicating the temple, he speaks about non-Jews also coming to the temple and bringing offerings to God. But the offerings which the Jew brings are the tamidim, the every day. There is a certain offering which is brought, which is in a certain sense is the spiritual inner structure of the world. And that is something which is the responsibility of the Jewish people. That's also the prayers, the tefillot that we say, which are not just the person as an individual praying to God that God should help him. It's something more cosmic, that somehow the whole cosmos is being related together with God, being linked up. And that's really what the offerings being offered in the temple are about. וזה שאית במדרש תהקרבת קורבנות קשורים דאגת הדבקה דאז דקלים, and the fact that in the midrash it says that the bringing of the offerings relates to the cleaving of the belt round the hips, in other words, of the vessel, not the radiance, but the vessel. Yeshloma, one can suggest, ki ika korbanot hu shal yadamu kiyum ha'olam. The main thing about the offerings is that through them the world exists. Let's miss out the brackets. So through the korbanot the world exists. Eilu shakoch hazeh sheyesh b'korbanot. That power, that aspect of the korbanot is Al yedei shamakhir et hakorbanot hu adam, is because the person bringing the offering is an adam shelamayla me'olam. That the word adam, this word man, this very special word for man, we'll see in a minute the way it relates to the divine name. We're going to see like different ways in which these are different aspects of the divine name. And this adam, this man, is above the world. The person who is above the world, in some sense, is able to bring the offering which connects the world to God and keeps the world in existence. But in order to do that, you can't lift up something by you can't lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. You have to have a fulcrum which is outside the system in order to move the system. Yes? Who said that? If I had the right fulcrum, I could move the moon. Who said that? There's some ancient mathematician or astronomer. Or maybe it was Newton. You need a fulcrum, but the fulcrum has to be outside the system. Then, when you've got the right fulcrum, you can move whatever it is you want to move. In order to have the effect on the world and bring the Creator into gear with the world, the Jew who has to somehow be able to stand beyond the world and then connect the world with the Creator. Judith's shaking her head.
I'm just thinking what an exalted function it gives to Jews.
I know, and look how they behave.
Yes. What can you do but shake your head? Very mistaken.
How odd of God to choose the Jews. It's all part of the divine sense of humor. An acquired taste.
an acquired sense of humor.
So the fact that the Itzah B'Zohar, as it says in the Zohar, the Mashkatuv, Adam Ki Yakriv, that it uses the word Adam, it's the Adam who's bringing the offering, and now there are four names. Adam, Gever, Enosh, Ish. Each of those names, it means man, it means a person. But and they're regarded as being on different levels. Adam, Gever, Enosh, Ish. Each one of these is found in the Bible referring to a man, and Adam is taken as the highest name. Shem Adam Moreh al Madrega Achi Elyona, the word Adam relates to the highest level. As it says, God created man in his image. So it uses the word Adam. God created the Adam in his image. So Adam is the aspect of man which is in the image of God. And it's this Adam, this highest level.
Which aspect of man?
Well,
I hate to think of this beautiful, refined notion of Hayahu Ve'Yehye in the form of one of us.
Well, we have a spiritual dimension within us.
We're very imperfect creatures.
We're very imperfect creatures, but we have a spark of godliness within us, which makes it even more poignant. The fact that being as imperfect as we... How rarely it appears, but it's not only that. We're torturing it. It's in galut, inside us. And we misbehave in various ways, even if we look as if we're behaving. Our thoughts are also part of the equation. And it says, Melech Asur Berahatim. It says in the Song of Songs, the king is bound in the tresses, like tresses of hair. That's one way of explaining Rahatim. But the Zohar says, Rihite Mocha. Rahat means to run, the running of the mind. The king, God, is bound in the running of the mind. So all the time there's a stream of consciousness, which may have some very negative dips into the mud of being. And what we're doing is dragging the king with us. So all the time this spark of godliness of the king, which is, or the queen, the princess it sometimes, which is there within us, is being dragged into different kinds of mud through the running of our thoughts, and sometimes worse, through our speech and our action as well. So there is the poignancy of this spiritual dimension which is within us.
You know that song, Mud, Mud, Glorious Mud?
Yes.
Nothing just like it for cooling the blood. I dumb.
Ad.
Humble blood.
Ah, that's right. Well, that's another aspect of the word Adam. See, the word Adam, one way of understanding the word Adam is from the word Adameh. I will be similar to God.
Ah, that's another one.
You see, Adameh, I will be
Adamah
similar.
Grounded.
I will be similar to God. And on the other hand, Adama is ground.
Yes.
So man is made from the ground.
And grounded.
Yes, yes. So you have two different directions. Yeah. So
it's a very exciting language, Hebrew.
You're right. So that is that through the Adam, he is able through the he is able to bring this offering, which achieves two things. On the one hand, the offerings which come close to God and bring about this connection between the world and God and the existence of the world is through the service of the man on the level of the vessels of the man. In other words, the physical person. Because it's the physical person who is bringing the offering. And as it says in brackets over here, that the physical offering has got the inanimate, the vegetable, and the animal, and then comes the human being as well. So there's the physical human being making that bond of different aspects of existence being unified with God. So in that way, there is this bridge being made at the altar in the temple in Jerusalem, some way over across the west wall, there is a considerable way inside. There is that altar where there is this moment, this ability to bond together the Creator and created. But having made that bond, there's a further dimension. Hakoch b'korbanot l'kayim olam, the power within the offerings to keep the world in existence, al yedei shemakhiv oto, otam u'adam shemuvdam elon, is through the fact that the person bringing the offering is himself separated from the world, who al yedei avodat ha'adam b'dargat ha'orot shelo, is through the service of the person on the level of radiance. So in other words, we need to be able to relate to God and life and the Torah in both aspects. We need to be able to work from the level of the vessel, and we need to work from the level of the radiance as well. And if we only work from one, then we are not going to achieve the unity, the full force of what needs to be achieved. So we have to be a mixture of a physical human being with an intense spiritual dimension inside us. And with the korbanot, with the bringing of the korbanot, both aspects are manifest. Because it's only by the fact that we're a physical human being that we're able to connect together to the animal and to the vegetable, to the flower and the olive oil and the wine, which is also part of the korban, and with the salt, which is the inanimate, and the flame is able to infuse the whole mixture. But if we approach just as a spiritual being, then we won't be able to get to relate to this physical dimension. So there is the physical side of it. On the other hand, there is the spiritual dimension as well, the radiance within, and it's in terms of that radiance that we have the spiritual power to make this connection. So there we are, a balance, perhaps an uneasy balance, between the physical and the spiritual in our relationship through the Torah with existence, of which korbanot is the kind of epitome of our avodah, our service in the world. V'zehu, last paragraph on this page, v'zehu she'inyan adam ki yakriv, and that is why the idea that a person bringing an offering udafka b'atchalat sefer korbanot is at the very beginning of the book about korbanot, the book of Vayikram, ki ha'korbanot atzmam hei min ha'behema, because the korbanot themselves, they are from the behema, from the animal. Now, the beast. Now, which beast? Our beast. Shebezeh nichlelet kama behema shebe adam, which includes the beast, which is in the person himself, nefesh abam.
The id.
The id or the yid?
The id in the yid.
Right. That's right. So there we have the nefesh abahamid, the animal soul. And this takes place through a certain quality of the divine soul. Now that's a very interesting thing. You see, you have the physical man or person.
It's like blasphemy.
You have the animal soul, and then you have within the divine soul, there is the root of this. And what is it within the divine soul? Well, now let's take Yud Kei Vav Kei, the divine name, right? So we're going to write it. We're not writing it as a name, but we're writing, that's the letter Yud. One second, let me do it in block letters. Wait. Yud Vav Dalad, right? That's the letter Yud. Now Hey, I'll put a line so it's not connected. If we have Hey, two Hays. Then we have Vav, two Vavs, and then again another Hay like that. Right? Now what does all that add up to? 10, and Yud is 10, Vav is 6, and Dalet is 4, that makes 20. Right. Hay and Hay makes?
10.
Vav and Vav? 12. 6 and 6 is 12. And then we have Hey and Hey again.
10.
20 and 10 is 30. 42. 52. Now, 52, let's look at this word. Behema. Base is
2.
2. He is
5.
Mem is
40.
40. He is
5.
So that adds up to
52.
Right. So the animal, the beast, as Judith calls it, right? The animal in man, it's really a function of the divine name in man. It's only a particular aspect of it.
Genius bless me.
It means that God creates obvious good.
And obvious, very obvious evil.
Yes. And also processes which look bad but have tremendous potential.
And what about that are bad and don't have any further potential?
Well, there are such things in the world, but most of what we directly come in contact with, hopefully, is something that can be transformed.
Yom HaShoah, I just don't see it.
Okay, but you know what? The fact that the Jew is there in the Shoah and
is the Korban.
On what
is the Korban?
The Jew is connecting the world to God, and you could call that the Korban. But the way in which the Jew connects to the world to God might be at a moment that we cannot imagine living, thank God, the comfortable lives that we live. But there are moments in a person's life or death where they connect not only themselves but the whole universe to God. And we can't evaluate something which is so enormous, which is really something infinite. It's beyond.
Can we evaluate anything, actually?
Well, that is the question, how we live, because the way in which we see the world then feeds in to our next step in life. Now, we might look at the world in such a way that it's paralyzing, God forbid, we can't make another step in life. I heard a son of a friend of mine unfortunately suffered a tremendous tragedy just recently, and he sat through the whole Shiva with his eyes shut. It was the most terrible, terrible tragedy that happened to him, and he just sat with his eyes shut because it was, you couldn't face it. And yet, with the help of God, eventually he will come through that, and in some way it will help him to contribute in a very rich way to the world. And the Shoah for the Jewish people, perhaps in a very mysterious way, has strengthened Jewish consciousness in an enormous way, at a time when the Jews were basically disappearing through acculturalization, uncertainty who they were, where they were going. The Shoah, in fact, suddenly aroused a tremendous sense of Jewish identity, which on the one hand, there's the whole project of the State of Israel, but in many other ways as well. There is And the Shoah is partly, or very significantly, in the background. Like Jonathan Sacks described the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in terms of a response to the Shoah. In the Shoah, the Jews were pursued with hate, and the Rebbe, looking at the Jewish people and what was happening to them, pursued them with love. And that sense of concern, of looking with Jews scattered round the world, and they're here and they're there, and you put a Chabad house in this place, and you send a shliach, maybe just a yeshiva bocha in the summer, goes and visits another place. You know, that's this sense of every single individual being vital, being infinitely precious. You see, so that's the Kiddush Hashem concept, which is there in the Shoah, is one that the Jew is very close to God, even if that is at the moment of leaving the world. And a very fascinating transformation of the concept of Kiddush Hashem is that, which came through the Shoah, is that more difficult than dying is living. Because to live another day in a place like Auschwitz was more difficult than dying. And the self-sacrifice that was needed in order to go on for another hour and another day. So that was called by a Mizrahi leader. He called it Kiddush HaChaim. And it's a genuinely forceful concept that the sanctification of life by living another step, another day, another hour. And it might be in a negative way, that means dealing with intense negativity, or it might be in a positive way, that a person dedicates their life, and here is where it dovetails with the Zohar and with Hasidic teaching, that a person lives their life so that every minute of their life is an expression of something holy and something spiritual. So it's we're dealing with a very rich ore of very precious metals. And the thing about very precious metals, very precious substances, is that sometimes they're dangerous to hold in your hands or to look at, and you have to have dark glass in order to look at it. It's not so easy to grapple with. But that's now that's the aspect of the behema, that's the animal, the beast, which emerges from a certain dimension of the divine soul, and that is the quality of the person as it is the vessel. You see, that is, we've got the word kelim, vessels here conveniently. This yud ke vav ke, which makes the word behema, the word animal, beast, and which then comes from the divine soul into the animal soul, into the physicality of the person. That's all the vessel dimension. Eilu shahakoch lezeh, but the power for this, the top line on the next page, hu al yidei bechinat ma denefesh elokis, is from another dimension of the divine soul. Now let's look at this other dimension. I think we're going to have to turn over here. Okay, so we've got the same yud, vav, and dalet, okay, which we already worked out, that's 20. And then we have hey, which is hey aleph. And then we have vav, drawing lines, vav, aleph, vav. Hope I've done that properly. Right? So let's work this out. Yud vav dalet is 20. Hey aleph is?
Six.
Vav aleph vav? 13. And then another hey aleph is?
Six.
Let's see what that works out to. 20 and 6 is 26. 36, 39, 45. Yeah. Right? 45 is aleph, dalet, mem. 1, 4, and mem is?
40.
Right. So Adam is 45. So there's the man and the beast in the Yudke Bavke, in the tetragrammaton of the divine soul. You can either work it out like this, or the other way, which comes to Behema, the beast. And we've got both those qualities. And the source of our different dimension. Now, so what is that? That's the difference between the radiance and the vessel. The vessel comes to the beast, and the radiance comes to the Adam. Okay? So we have those two qualities within us, and that is the paradoxical mixture of our situation in the world, because we're dealing with a very paradoxical world. We're dealing with a world which is created by God, and in which every particle, in every particle of the world is godliness, if it could only be recognized. And so the world, on the one hand, it's finite, limited, lugubrious, and on the other hand, it's divine illumination as well. And we stand there in the middle, trying to mediate the two. Okay? So that's our situation. We then have, so that's the person, that's the Jew, the complex Jew. Now we can see why Jews are such complex people. Right? Now, given that we are such complex people standing in the middle between the Creator and the created, we then have the beautiful additional dimension of Torah and Mitzvah. Now, in fact, we could write the word Torah in red because of what it's going to say in the next paragraph. Look at paragraph. Dalet. V'hine yadua, now behold, it's known, the Torah mitzvot, the Torah and mitzvot, hem dugmat orot v'kelim, are like radiance and vessel. In other words, Torah is like radiance, and when we study Torah, we are immersing ourselves in the radiance, we're expressing the radiance that's flowing through us, and when we do mitzvot, which is with practical, physical things usually, we are involved with the kelim, with the vessel. So according to this we can say these two levels through which the Jewish people connect with God are made on the one hand through learning Torah and on the other keeping mitzvot. Through keeping mitzvot the cleaving of the kelim of the vessel, through studying Torah the orot, the cleaving of the radiance. Valpiza Yeshlukashizemadikunezoa. Now this can be connected with what it says in Tikune Zohar, another selection of the Zohar. Shigimul Hatchilot Shachrit Mincha Ba'avit. The three prayers, morning prayer, afternoon prayer, and evening. Heim Kaneged Arya Shova Nesha. They correspond to three different images in the vision of the Merkavah that Yechezkel had, the lion, the angel with four faces. One face is a lion, the other face is an ox, and the other face is an eagle, and the fourth face was that of a man. Ve'inyan Adam ki yakriv, and when it says that a man brings an offering, da raita, that's Torah. So you have these three faces of the animal dimension, which is really the spiritual animal dimension of the holy of the within the Jew, and then you have a higher dimension which is Torah, which connects us together with God in a very deep way. And it says because of this that it's we have the whole concept of prayer, through which we have this concept of Torah, the Mahavi Ba'Korban Ashlim Ba'Adam, so that there is a total coming together of the person with God, Zot HaTorah Adam. There's a verse which says, Zot HaTorah Adam, it's in Chukat, in Parshas Parah, that's right, we read it. This is the Torah. Now, literally it means that this is the Torah, this is the teaching. Adam ki yamud ba'oel, a man who dies in a tent. But in the Zohar and in the Kabbalistic tradition it says Zot HaTorah Adam. This is what the Torah is. Adam, a man. So in other words, the Torah is a man, or man is the Torah. So we've got this whole relationship with God through prayer. The three prayers, they correspond to different aspects of the angels, the malachim, and the Adam, the deeper level of Adam is Torah, is the Sefer Torah, as if that is what the real man is. The real man is the Sefer Torah. Like we say that every Jew has a letter in the Torah scroll. There's this connection between each individual and the Torah. And the zeshet tefilotim keneged korbanot, the fact that the prayers correspond to the offerings who keneged korbanot atzman, is relating to the actual offerings. V'inyan adam ki yakriv, and when we say that a person, a Jew, is bringing the offering, da raita, that is the Torah, hu akoch Yisrael, that's the power that the Jew has got, lahakriv korbanot, to bring the offerings. Liyotam bechinat adam, so that they should have this quality of being adam, dveikud orot shenasit al yedei esek haTorah, the cleaving of radiance which comes about through the study of Torah. So we've got two aspects. We've got the actual offerings, and we've got the power to bring the offerings. It's like separating them. That there's the offering and the power to bring the offering. And so that is the difference between the avodah on the level of the vessel and the avodah on the level of the radiance. So there is the bringing of the korbanot, and there is the radiance which enables us to bring them.
You've made it two separate things, but it's interesting. We've got this concept of Arva Kalim in the original creation of the world. And in that sense, the Kalim contain the R.
Right.
You need the Kalim to contain the R. So maybe it means the same here, that you need the mitzvahs to contain your learning.
Absolutely, because your learning is telling you to do mitzvah. You can separate them in order to analyze them and discuss them, but in practice they have to go together, because what is the Torah actually describing? It's describing the mitzvah. And in fact, in this discourse, he says the aspect of Torah which most represents this, like the on the most essential level, is halakha, where it's actually talking about what you do. So it's moving from the highest level of the essence of God,
which is both together,
to the simple practicality of what you're actually supposed to do. And so you have the Torah saying what you're supposed to do, then you have to do it if you're able to. Because
we started off, we described Kalim as a way of relating to God, but like a belt going round the person, that it's related but it's separate.
Right.
And we said that the light, this radiance, is somehow a higher, as if they're two separate things. But they seem to be two steps, or you need them both.
You certainly need them both. Let's take now, we're coming to Pesach. How does a person prepare for Pesach? One way is, he's got to get the matzah, and he's got to get this, and he's got to get that, and he's got to clean the house, and get rid of the chometz, and sell the chometz, all the different practical aspects relating to Pesach. On the other hand, a very good way of preparing for Pesach is to learn the first Perek of Psachim, or the last Perek of Psachim. Yeah, the first is Ola Bosa, talking about Boidik Chometz. The last Perek, Ave Psachim, is talking about the actual running of a Seder. You know, so a person, and to learn the Halachas and the Shulchan Aruch, you know, like, so there's learning Torah as a way of a kind of inner spiritual preparation for the actual doing of the mitzvahs. Together, of course, with giving tzedakah as part of the whole process of preparing for Pesach. The Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about the laws of Pesach, talks about Moaz Chitin, you know, about people in
giving
a town.
Money.
Yeah, that's right, looking after the poor people, that they should be able to have all their needs for
Kimchot
Pesach.
Pesach.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so there are spiritual ways of preparing for the actual practicality, you know, in relation to the practicality, it's almost that stock is also part of a spiritual preparation. So that when you sit down at the Seder with your own matzah and wine, then it's with a sense that you prepared for this in the right way. So this quality of radiance and vessel, you know, this is there at every step of the way in the life of a Jew.
But what it brings out is, if you're just doing it, in a way, you're just doing it. It's got no spiritual, you're just doing it. If you've just got the radiance, you've got nothing to contain the radiance. You haven't got a keli to contain it.
Absolutely.
So you've got to have the doing to contain the radiance. You've got to have both.
As the Gemara says, "Kala oima ein li eila Torah, afilu Torah ein li." If someone says, "I've only got Torah, I don't have to do mitzvah because I just learned Torah," he doesn't even have Torah. the Torah itself is predicating that one must not only learn Torah but fulfill what it's saying.
That's
right. Yeah, and pick up. Yes,
the
say
I.
Svaradi, please.
Sorry, you don't like the language, do
I
you?
Don't like Ashkenazi.
Jewish can't relate it. Kol shema'asav merubim mechochmato, chochmato mitkayemet. If someone's actions are more than his wisdom, then his wisdom it stands. It continues.
Which is almost what we're saying.
Whereas if it's the opposite,
needs a keli to.
That's right.
Masim and a keli to contain the light.
And then it says, "V'chol shechochmato mehuba me'maasal."
If he's more
ein chochmato,
if he's more clever dick, then and doesn't do very much, then his cleverness won't remain.
Yeah,
that's exactly, what exactly.
It will evaporate. Yeah.
No good just being clever.
Yeah.
All right. So let's take this next paragraph, the middle
they're
of this
really
page.
Are chochma. They're really wonderful sayings.
You're right. The sages really are sages.
Yes, the sages really are sages.
V'al pizei yesh levayzer. So according to this, we can explain. Shatchalat hadibur me'ol moed haita pashat korbanot. The idea that the first teaching from God to Moshe, from the tent of meeting, from the sanctuary, was about korbanot, about the offerings. Ki agilui de Torah, because the revelation of Torah, hu be'ikar b'dinei korbanot, is basically in the laws of the korbanot. Ki ze sh'al yidei korbanot na'ase abirud olam, because through the korbanot there is a purification of the world. V'chein ze sh'al yadam hu kiyam olam, and also the fact. One second. The fact that from the korbanot there is achieved a transformation, a purification of the world, and the fact that through the korbanot hu kiyum olam is the keeping in existence of the world, all that is b'koach haTorah, with the power of Torah, that means adam ki yakhiv da'araita, with the power of the person who is coming close, which is itself Torah, the person who is learning Torah, the person who is bringing the offerings, this spiritual dimension of the person, the Adam, the man, which is in the Neshama. So there's the Behema in the Neshama, and there's also the Adam in the Neshama, the higher level. V'yesh l'kas is im yom ha'sheni b'nissan, and this can be connected with the second day of Nissan, which is tonight and tomorrow, because on the second day of Nissan, each day of the month of Nissan, we read about the offerings that were brought by a member of the tribes, the leader of one of the 12 tribes, and each day they brought an offering to the sanctuary when the sanctuary was first put up. And it was in the first days of the month of Nisan, and so we're repeating that. So today was someone from the tribe of Judah, and tomorrow will be Nathanael ben Tzur, Nasi Yisachar, someone from the tribe of Yisachar. That's on the second of Nisan. Now, Yisachar is a very interesting thing. Why did Yisachar come second? Who lefish b'nei Yisachar are you yodim b'torah? Our sages tell us in many places that the tribe of Yisachar were great scholars of the Torah. They gave the advice to the leaders of the tribes to bring these offerings in the sanctuary. V'yesh lomar sheshnei anyanim tluim zeh bezeh, and one can suggest these two ideas are connected. D'lefi shehayu yodim b'torah, because the people of Yisachar knew Torah very well, v'gilu ha-Torah b'inyan ha-korbanot, and the revelation of Torah is in the korbanot. L'chein natnu etza l'itnadev korbanot. Therefore, they gave the advice to offer these offerings. Now, then it goes on about the way in which the Torah is higher than the world. It speaks about different aspects of Torah and the way in which, on the one hand, the Torah gives existence to the world. When God made the world, he looked in the Torah, and from that he made the world, and there are aspects of the Torah which keep the world in existence. But on the other hand, the Torah is beyond the world completely. So there we have different dimensions of the Torah. And then there's a whole discussion. Where is the Torah? Is the Torah on the very highest? If we go back to this diagram where we have Creator and created, what's the prime locus of the Torah? Is the Torah with the Creator flowing down into the world, which is the way we often think of it? So that means it's naturally with the Creator, but then it comes down, you know, like we're lucky. The Torah comes down into the world. Or could you say that the prime locus of the Torah is in the world? And that although it emerges from the infinite essence of the oneness of God, the Creator, beyond everything, in fact, the inner nature of the Torah, as it is in its own essence, is to be here in the world. Now, although the discourse doesn't mention this later on, this does correspond to what is reported in the Talmud in Shabbat, where it's speaking about the giving of the Torah, and the way when Moshe went on Mount Sinai in order to receive the Torah, the angels said, "How can you let the Torah be given to these human beings? They are disgusting." They must have been reading your book. So the angels were shocked. How could the Torah be given in the world? Keep the Torah. Tana hotcha b'shamayim. Keep your glory in heaven. And God said to Moshe, "Nu, go and give them an answer." So Moshe said, "I don't know what to say." God said, "Take hold of my throne of glory and you will know what to say." So he did that, and Moshe boldly said to the angels, "Did you go down to Egypt? The Torah is all about people who were in Egypt and went out. Do you have to do business that it should say don't steal and be deal honestly in business, etc.? All the practical laws of the Torah, don't commit adultery. It's got nothing to do with angels. It's for human beings in our complex, ambiguous position down here. We are the ones who need the Torah." Now, it doesn't actually mention that, that I noticed in this discourse, but what the discourse is saying is that the essential nature of Torah is, in fact, in this world. And that's really what Torah is. The Torah is bringing the essence of the Creator into the world. So, and that's really Torah from its very highest essence, and so that's the whole flow down, and that's the quality of water of the Torah. So let's go on to the last paragraph, which is paragraph Tet on the penultimate page, and we'll get to the little Aleph. V'zeo v'yikra el Moshe v'yadav Hashem. That's what it says. He, God, called to Moshe and spoke to him and said, "Adon ki yakriv, a man who comes close to God, who brings an offering." In other words, t'zeh shebechol dibrut kadma kriya l'shon chibam. The fact that before all statements to God there was a calling, an expression of love, who gam kadima b'mayla, is also something very exalted. Shakriya hilamayla madiba, the expression of love is higher than the speech. Va'ad shenema v'yikra stam. How do we see that v'yikra is so much higher? It just says v'yikra, he called. V'lo nema mihu akore. It doesn't say who is doing the calling. כי התחייה היא מעצמות או אינסוף של המילה מהוויה. Because the calling is coming from the very essence of the infinite, which is higher than the name Yutke Vavke. Eilu sha'afu pichein, but even so, mizeh sha'atchiyah hayta lifnei dibur davka, the fact that the calling was before the speech of God, where he's telling the actual mitzvot, muvan, from this it's understood, sha'atchiyah shayechet gam la'dibur, that this calling relates to the speech that God then says, the command. V'yeish lomah, one can suggest, sha'adibrot v'amirot v'atzibuyim de Torah, all that when it says God spoke, God said, God commanded, they come from the name Yudke Vavke. But when it says Vahakhiya, when it says the calling on the last page then, He me'atzmut, that comes from the very essence of God. Ve'inyan vayikhar vayedaber, and so saying he called and then he spoke, is drawing the revelation of the essence into the speaking. So there's the essence which is higher. So we're looking here at an anatomy of the divine communication to man, that we have the essence, and then it reaches from the essence to a lower level down into the actual speech, the words of God coming to Moshe. And so this Vayikra, this calling, is making a flow from the essence to the words of God which is being expressed. Ubechlalut hu amshachat haTorah kamo shimushreshet ba'atzmut. This is the flow of Torah as the Torah comes from the very essence of God. And this can be connected with why Vayikra has a little aleph. So, Torah Tadmor Zaken, as the Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi, the Alter Rebbe, said, Sha'alef Zera de Vayikra, the little aleph of the word Vayikra, More al ha'anava v'abitul de Moshe, indicates the tremendous humility and self-abnegation of Moses. Dagam sheyadam alot atzmo, even though he knew his own greatness. Mikol makom lo hechshiv et atzmo, but nonetheless he didn't think highly of himself. V'adarav yediyah zu hevi oto, and even in fact his knowledge of his greatness made him liot shval be'enei atzmo od yoter, made him even more humble in his own eyes. Because he thought to himself, if any other person would have been given the same job with the same qualities, they would have done it better than me. So although he knew what a tremendous responsibility he was in, he didn't think that was because of his great prowess. And he said, anyone, if anyone would have heard God speaking at the burning bush and everything else that happened, they would have done it. And you know what? They'd have done it better than me. V'yesh lomah, one can suggest from our time, this idea that this little aleph ha-romezet aleph be told to Moshe, which hints at the selflessness of Moshe. Why is it in the word vayikra? Is because al yedei ha-bitul shelo, because through his self-abnegation, na'ase kli la'gilu de vayikra, he becomes a vessel. His abnegation makes him a vessel to the revelation of Vayikra, and it's that flow from the very essence which comes about because of his abnegation. Hamshachat v'gilu haTorah kmo shehi mushreshet ba'atzmut, the flow and revelation of Torah as it is rooted in the very essence of God. And through this we can understand why it says Vayikra when it's talking about the offerings, even though for every statement from God there was this calling. The idea that Torah is bonded, is rooted in the very essence of the divine, is revealed particularly in the fact that the Torah is teaching here the laws of the Korbanot, because the power of the Korbanot is levarer et haolam, to purify the world, v'lasoto dira lo yitbarach, and to make it into a dwelling for God. So there we have the idea that this here, Vayikra el Moshe, of our Vayikra, these words, Vayikra el Moshe, v'yadav Hashem elav, there's something like he called to Moses and God spoke to him. It's really like a general statement about everything that's happening in the Torah. And the Korbanot are a general statement about everything that we are doing in our service of God. V'hine yadua, last five lines. Now it's known. The b'chol echad v'achat, in every single Jew, man and woman, yesh p'chinat mi'p'chinat Moshe. There is the quality of Moshe. We all have a Moshe inside us. Kolel habitul de Moshe, including the self-abnegation, the humility of Moshe. U'mizem muvan, and from this we can understand, she'inyan v'yikra el Moshe, that the idea that God is calling to Moshe, hu gam l'chol echad v'achat mi'Yisrael. God is also calling to every individual Jewish man and woman. God is calling to each person. And especially kesholomed pasuk zeh, especially when we study this verse, this is something that's happening to us at this moment. Va'al yedei zeh, and through this gam nimshechet lo netinat koach, there is also transferred to the person an empowerment al avodat hakorbanot beruchaniyut, on the spiritual service of the offerings, whether it's prayer or other aspects of Judaism, and that becomes a good preparation to literally offering, bringing offerings in the temple. There in the temple, God, as we say in the Tfilat Musaf, we will carry out the laws as you commanded. Beveit HaMikdash HaShlishi, in the third temple, שיבנה במהרה בימינו, which will be built speedily in our days, ובקרוב ממש, surely very close.